The world has known many dreamers, some good and some bad, but we have never known a more interesting dreamer than Joseph, the 11th son of Jacob and the firstborn of Rachel. His life was literally filled with dreams, dreams about himself or dreams of other people which he sought to interpret. And it was this preoccupation with dreams that led eventually to the unenviable title of the dreamer. Three things I want to say about Joseph. As a dreamer, he was disdained. As a dreamer, he was disappointed. As a dreamer, he was also distinguished. First, as a dreamer, Joseph was disdained. He aroused a great deal of suspicion from the very beginning because he is portrayed in the Bible as a spoiled son and an unpopular little brother. You will recall from the story in the Old Testament that he was favored by his father, so much favored that his father made him a coat of many colors, or as one translation has it, a coat with long sleeves. This was to show the partiality which Jacob felt toward young Joseph. And as his brothers moved about the fields where they tended the shepherds in their long, black, drab, rough, coarse tunics, young Joseph sported about the fields with his robe made of imported dyes from the best lambs of the day, a robe like that which was worn only by the wealthiest class, and he didn't ease the tensions between himself and his brothers as he strutted before them, bragged about his father's love, and needled them because they didn't have a robe like his own. I suppose what made matters worse was that he was what the schoolboys would call a tattletale. On one occasion, extra-biblical tradition tells us, he came to his father with a story about Bilhah and Zilpah. He told his father that they had been worshiping strange gods, that they had been intimate with Canaanite women, that they were shrewd and cunning in their business practices, and that they were very cruel to the sons of the concubine of Jacob. Well, he was a galling fellow to have to live with. His ego just stuck out, especially in his dreams. I dreamed, he said to his brothers, that we were binding sheaves, and my sheaves stood upright, and your sheaves bowed before me. I dreamed, he said to his family, that the sun and the moon and the stars all bowed and did obeisance unto me. Alfred Bunn speaks for Joseph when he says, I dreamt that I dwelt in marble halls with vassals and serfs at my side. Of course, the brothers of Joseph thought of themselves as vassals and serfs in the presence of this young, ego-centered Joseph. Remembering their father Jacob, and how he had connived to steal the birthright from his own brother Esau, the brothers of Joseph were always highly suspicious of this young man. And thus the family became antagonistic toward Joseph from the very beginning. As I read the scriptures, I detect that they really thought that he was quite a young fool. He was about 17 years of age when he began to tell these strange dreams to his family. And seeing him come from the house into the fields, the brothers would say, Ah, there comes the dreamer. Young dreamers are always considered fools. Jesus was the youngest of his brothers, and his brothers thought that he was mad because of the great dream he had for the kingdom of God and the mission which he had been called to establish. In a book called Family Portrait by Cowan and Coffey, there is a story about James, the older brother of Jesus, who on one occasion was criticizing Jesus by saying, When I was a boy, and Mary Cleopas interrupted him and said, James, get out. You were born middle age. To dream is the prerogative of the youth. And when you get too old to dream, you're really too old. Dreamers are, I suppose, never appreciated. Palissy was never appreciated until he was dead, nor was Galileo for that matter. But dreamers are pioneers of progress. Life is made out of dream stuff. The cradle of reality is the world of dreams. Frank Parks Cadman observes, all religion, all art, all finance, all business, every ship at sea, every bridge that spans the Gulf, and every discovery in the great world of science owes its origin, its inception, and its first impulse to the exercise of that strange gift, imagination, a power to make images. Well, he's talking about dreams. Josephus Daniels was Secretary of the Navy under Woodrow Wilson. He once asked Andrew Carnegie the secret of his great success. And Carnegie said, I owe it all to my flashes. And then he explained, each morning when I get out of bed, I have a flash in my mind of something that I should do that day. And if I am faithful to my matin flashes, then I am successful. Joseph had matin flashes. Joseph had dreams which came to him every morning. No wonder he was successful. He was faithful to his dreams and his mental aspirations. Columbus dreamed. He dreamed of a new world, and he refused to be impeded in his efforts to discover that world until in 1492 his dream came true. Edison dreamed of light in the midst of the darkness. Bell dreamed of communicating with people far away. And Luther dreamed of a church which would be free of tradition and free of superstition. The Wright brothers dreamed of flying like the eagles in the sky. And Dr. Salk dreamed of freeing little children from the dread disease of polio. Behind every marvel in the world, there is a great dreamer. Michelangelo did not take his brush in hand to paint the frescoes on the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel until he had spent years dreaming about that chapel. And Handel never wrote the Messiah until for many, many, many months, turning over in his mind were the rousing strains of a great composition. In 1491, the dean of the Cathedral of Seville called together his chapter and said to them, let us build a church so great that those who come after us may think us mad to have attempted it. And the result was that beautiful Cathedral of Seville. Dreamers are disdained, however, by most of us. We have no real appreciation for dreamers. In the case of Joseph, he was disappointed in his dreams. Dreams often leave us frustrated because to dream is to experiment, and to experiment means sometimes to fail. And that's, I think, why we don't dream great dreams, because we don't want to fail. In the year 1926, the federal government had an auction sale of 150,000 model patents which never made it. Now, some of them were very weird and coarse and funny to our own eyes and ears today. There was, amid those 150,000 model patents, an automatic bed bug buster. There was a churn which a woman could use while she was also rocking the baby in the cradle. There was a device to cure you from snoring, which consisted of a hose running from one's mouth to his own ear. There was also a device to warm your cold feet, which consisted of a hose running from your mouth to your feet. And there was an adjustable pulpit. Tradition says that when the auctioneer came to the pulpit, he told about a preacher who had used it, and he said to his congregation, where are you going to spend eternity? And inadvertently, he touched the spring, and down he went. Well, those are funny to us, but they are not funny either. They're sad, because 150,000 model patents represent shattered dreams of 150,000 people who were disillusioned and disheartened because their dreams did not come true. Joseph's dream was rudely interrupted by his brothers when they cast him into a pit. Now, a pit's no place to have dreams. The psalmist used to talk about being in a horrible pit. That wasn't the place nor the time to be dreaming. He was released from the pit only to be sold to a passing band of traders. If you travel in the Holy Land today, The guides will point to a little town of Dothan where tradition says he was sold to that passing band of Midianites. Surely there is nothing worse than to become the property of someone else. Homer was thinking about that in his Odyssey when he wrote, "Whatever day makes man a slave takes half his worth away." But Joseph was sold to Potiphar, who was the captain of the guard for Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. It wasn't long after he became the slave of Potiphar until the captain saw that there was great potential in this young, honest, imaginative man. And so he made him the overseer of all his possessions. That is to say, Joseph became Potiphar's private secretary, his houseboy, and the administrator of all his affairs. But if his dream were interrupted by his brothers who sold him into slavery, he was tempted to forget his dream completely by Nephra, the wife of Potiphar. We are told that Nephra was a young and beautiful woman, and Potiphar was an old man. And Joseph was a young man and was quite handsome. Her husband was away most of the time, and so she said to Joseph, "Potiphar will never know." But Joseph said to Nephra, "Potiphar may never know, but Joseph will know. He knew that even though you may hide your sins from the eyes of others, you have to live with yourself. And you cannot do that if you're not chaste and virtuous and honest and decent." Now, as the manager of Potiphar's affairs, he did his best to steer clear of Nephra. But it wasn't an easy thing to do because, after all, he was a slave and she was constantly calling for him, repeating the temptation. Temptation is bad enough when it comes once, but when it comes again and again and wears you down, that becomes pathetic. Jesus was tempted not once, but three times in the wilderness. Finally, Joseph fled out of his coat of many colors, leaving it in the hands of his seducing Nephra, fleeing youthful lust rather than to deny his dream. Do you wonder where he found the secret of his chastity and his purity? Thomas Chalmers was riding in a cart when the driver of the cart struck the rope, the whip, across the back of the horse. And Thomas Chalmers said to him, "Why did you do that? I didn't see the horse do anything he shouldn't have done." And the driver said, "When we arrive at this point, there is a white post beside the road, and for some reason, the horse dislikes that post. And so he always shies away from it, and with the whip, I give him a little something else to think about." I think God had given Joseph dreams to think about, dreams that would keep him from yielding to the pressures of Nephra and the pressures of the great kingdom of Egypt, of which he had become a slave. Well, when Potiphar returned home, you would have thought he would have had Joseph killed because of the report which Nephra gave him. But Potiphar suspected Nephra of philandering. And so he took Joseph and cast him into a prison where God began to discipline the dreams which had already been so hurt by his brothers and by Nephra. 2 years he spent in that loathsome prison in Egypt. Bonhoeffer spent 2 years in a prison during the days of the German concentration of Jews. To a friend he wrote on May 9, 1944, "I'm sure everything that happens to me has a purpose, even if it cuts right across our own wishes. As I see it, I am here for some purpose, and I only hope I am living up to it." Do you ever wonder what the purpose is in your life? What God is trying to do with you when sometimes it seems that God's discipline of your dreams literally shatters them? It is possible that in prison, God was protecting Joseph from an evil woman. It is possible that in prison, he was helping him to learn how to comfort others because the prison was given into his hands and he became a trustee. And his arrogance soon was abated, and he was softened and became a minister to those about him. Or maybe he was in prison to practice for the final exam. Whatever the purpose may have been, he was soon to discover what Harry Emerson Fosdick discovered much later. "No horse ever gets anywhere," said Fosdick, "till he is harnessed. No steam or gas ever drives anything until it is confined. And no life ever grows great until it is focused and dedicated and disciplined." Well, as a dreamer, he was disdained. And as a dreamer, he was disappointed. But also as a dreamer, Joseph was greatly distinguished. He predicted a sensible course for the nation of Egypt, interpreting the royal dream. No one believes anymore in dreams which predict the future, I suppose. Sigmund Freud says that dreams have a lot more to do with what's already happened than what's going to happen in the future. But the ancients believed in omens, in dreams, and they believed that dreams had something to do with what was going to happen. Calpurnia, the wife of Caesar, was greatly afraid for her husband the night before Brutus killed him, because she had dreamed about that very thing. And Claudia sent word to Pilate, her husband, that she had suffered many things in a dream because of Jesus, and he should be extremely cautious. Pharaoh dreamed of 7 fat cows, which were eaten by 7 lean cows. He dreamed of 7 full ears of corn, which were eaten by 7 thin ears of corn. And he asked Joseph to interpret that dream for him. And Joseph foresaw the coming disaster which was about to fall upon Egypt. And so he advised him to take proper precautions. He advised him to make proper preparations for a coming time of 7 years of famine. "Go find a man," said Joseph, "who is discreet and honest and full of integrity and filled with the spirit of the gods." That's the need of our day, isn't it? A man who is wise and who is discreet and who can read the omens of the future and who can lead us through the storms unto a safe haven. Oh, how we need men and women like that today. Joseph was given a position of power because of his faithfulness to his dreams. He became the vice regent or the prime minister of the nation of Egypt. And he built great granaries to store their food so there would be adequate for the famine. And he built great canals to irrigate their fields so that they would produce to maximum capacity. And he taxed the people 1/5, 20% of everything they were able to grow, that it might be stored away for the famine. The result was, Pharaoh was so pleased with him, he gave him to wife the beautiful daughter Asenath of a priest of Egypt, who bore him 2 wonderful sons at the age of 30, 13 years after he had been sold into slavery by his own brothers. Well, Joseph, because he was a dreamer, was able to salvage a struggling Israel in its most difficult time. There was a famine in Canaan, and the brothers of Joseph were sent to Egypt to buy corn. They did not recognize their superior upon the throne, second only to Pharaoh, when they knelt before him begging for corn. But Joseph remembered the dreams which he had dreamed. Edwin Markham captures the thrill of that moment when he says, "Ah, great it is to believe the dream when we stand in youth by the starry stream, but a greater thing is to fight life through and say at the end, the dream is true." And so he brought his family, his whole family, into Goshen, the well-watered delta area in the valley of Egypt, the most luxurious and beautiful part of the nation of Egypt. And all of this simply proved to Joseph, and proves to me and to you this morning, that history is ultimately under divine control. "You thought it for evil," said Joseph to his brothers about his being sold into slavery, "but God meant it for good. For through it all, God has brought salvation to Egypt, he has brought salvation to Israel, and all history has been made to serve God." Judas betrayed Jesus, the most dastardly deed ever committed by mortal man, and yet somehow God, in his own inimitable wisdom, was able to use that as an instrument for his own purposes. Rome persecuted the Christians, killing multiplied thousands of them during the first 300 years of the Christian era. And yet somehow God was able to use that persecution as water for the soil from which grew a strong and vibrant church. These are awesome times in which we live. We've just come through a war. There is an unsettled world out there. Until the very end of times, things will remain in this unsettled state of affairs. But we must remember that we are not in the hands of the communist. We are not in the hands of the capitalist. We're in God's hands. And all of history, including the communist and the capitalist, are in the hands of God, putty in God's hands. Sometimes our intentions do not always turn out right. But as Reinhold Niebuhr says, history fortunately has a way of developing beyond the intentions of the agents of its action. And I am convinced that God will accomplish his kingdom. He will accomplish it in his own way and is in his own time. And in that sense, we know that all things do work together for good to those who love God. Joseph's dream came true. Not because he dreamed. Sometimes we dream and our dreams do not come true. But Joseph's dream came true because he refused to let his dream be shattered by trouble or broken by moral corruption. He was faithful to God who had given him that dream, and the God who had given him the dream turned it into reality. And so my suggestion to you as a result of these remarks this morning is that we dream big. We have high ambitions and we set worthy goals, that we remain obedient to the heavenly vision. And we watch those goals and those visions and those dreams materialize before our very eyes. Let me conclude these remarks with this prayer from the pen of Marie Lenart. Give us great dreams, O God, while thou art giving, and keep the end. It is enough if we live by the hope, nor falter in the living, that lures us on from dust to dignity. Give us the courage of the soul's high vision, though its fulfillment here we never see, the heart to make and keep the brave decision, and faith to leave the ultimate with thee.